Brewing with Style is brought to you by Northern Brewer. With fast shipping, expert advice, and all the ingredients and equipment you need to make the best beer possible. Visit them today at northernbrewer.com. This is the Brewing Network's Brewing with Style, hosted by Jamil Zainashev and Mike Tasty McDole, along with special guest Jonathan Plisé. Now, here's Jamil.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hey, listeners.
Welcome.
We're doing a couple of shows tonight.
So. Show two always gets me a little...
A little horny?
A little looser.
I mean, looser? Yeah.
Could be both, I guess.
Of course, Jay-Z, you've been doing shows all day. You did the first run earlier. Right?
Yeah, we knocked out a couple earlier today.
Man, you're busy.
Hey.
Talking beer, living beer.
Who's running that brewery?
That was such enthusiasm, John.
Yeah. Can you repeat that question, Tasty? I was wondering that.
Who's running that brewery?
Talking beer, living beer.
See how he's blowing right by it?
He's giving up. He's jumped the shark. Had enough of owning a brewery.
Oh, my God.
Taking days off. Just come over here and
I get people complaining at me now. I'm so distraught.
You're your own boss. What are you talking about complaining? Who could be complaining? How's that happen?
People that listen to the show.
Oh my God.
Hey. I'm just like crushed. Tell Justin I need a year off.
Sabbatical.
That's it.
Have you gotten your paycheck yet?
Yeah, once I get my paycheck, I'm taking a year off.
Yeah, you and me both.
All right. Okay. You don't need a very big paycheck if you shop at our fine sponsor, NorthernBrewer.com.
That fixed shipping?
Yeah, like $7.99 shipping and great ingredients, great people. You know, when we do these shows, we talk about all sorts of sometimes unique ingredients that you might need.
And equipment
that you might need to brew one of these styles.
Sure.
And so, one of the places you can check, if you don't find it in your local homebrew shop, go down to northernbrewer.com right there on your clickety-click internet device, your $10,000 gold-plated Apple wristwatch.
Could be your watch. Could be your
beer watch.
And do some clickety-click and get yourself an order from northernbrewer.com. Just right there. Bingo.
Done.
You're good to go.
Beer ingredients on the way.
Right. Brew it, drink it, done.
Done.
All right. What are we brewing and drinking today?
Goose. Does it get more opposite than going from we did light American lager in the previous episode today?
They're actually identical.
Similar.
But looks-wise,
sour.
Very similar. Same color, everything.
Yeah, from Bud Light to Dre Fontaine and Goose, that's a big swing.
Ah, no.
It's a 180.
Right. I would think the big swing would be something like, Russian Imperial Stout.
Throw you for a loop.
Really big.
Bud Light to that, done.
So, John, what about whose?
It's sour. It's acidic. It's a pale, strong color.
Yeah.
It has some
barnyard,
earthy kind of, what else? Yeah. Notes to it? I don't know. That's it. That's goose. You age it for like 2 or 3 years. You use it to blend later with other gooses. And then...
Right. So, what you do is you brew a lager. You brew an American light lager.
Right? And you spit in it.
No, you brew.
And then you let wild yeast ferment.
Oh, my God. Poor Tasty. He's like, why did I agree to do this?
Look at that face. He doesn't even budge.
That's a little stoic, I think.
I was waiting for everybody to get to some point here.
You brew your lambic, your straight old lambic,
right,
every year.
Which is like what? Wheat malt and pilsner, right?
Yeah, you can do like, 50-50 wheat malt and pilsner or barley. You use all sorts of stuff they throw in there. They throw in oats. They throw in all sorts of crap.
Yeah.
Now, I did not say they specifically throw crap in their beer. I'm just saying.
They smell like
I've
not
heard
literally.
They throw in all sorts of things.
I've never opened a bag of crap in my brewery in my life.
Just tastes like crap.
I've pinched one off in my brewery. So they will brew a. I'm so verklempt. They will brew a lambic each year and put that up in the barrels and all that, and they'll let that age. And then I think the standard is, a minimum of 3 years before it can be huza, and then they blend back with the younger and the older. And what they're trying to do is take the, you know, some that might be more sour and less body, and one with a little more sweetness, relative sweetness, and a little more body and things like that, and blend it back to get the perfect kind of balanced drinking.
Dial it in.
Yeah.
I mean, if you got the three-year-old and say package that, it'd be just way too offensive and wouldn't be a very good beverage. So you got to back that off with something. And, of course, you're a goose maker, so you use your one-year goose, right?
Right.
And your two.
Yeah.
You may have some three. I mean, then you may be putting four in there.
Yeah,
it's just older and newer.
Yeah. Exactly. They might have a little four. They may save some three from this year.
Yeah, they might have
to next year. And
it's more acidic. You know, has more special character that they want. You know,
they don't use it. A lot of, but they will like a little bit.
Yeah, if it's ever lacking, they can always go to that barrel and throw some in and bring that back for.
It's kind of like the winemaker's art.
Yeah.
It's the wine of the beers.
Yeah.
And they do by taste, right?
Like they don't do by feel.
I bet, but they're gone.
You could measure.
They have a palate they're looking for, a palatable taste.
Yes, absolutely. You know, they will. you.
I don't do that.
This year's is less liquidy.
It feels kind of dry. No. You take the way I've done it in the past is I will take samples of each one, and see, the difficult thing is, as a home brewer, I would have three samples that I would be blending. And so I would take, a little of, I'd taste each one separately. Then I'd try a little of, one and two together. I'd try a little of two and three together. I'd try a little of one and three together. And I would just kind of go, how about if I did this? How about if I did that? And then I'd kind of get some ideas and some notes. And then I would try, okay, so it's, 50% one, it's 10% two, and it's 40% three. Ah, yeah, that's it. Or no, a little bit this way, that way. Okay, so that's all well and good. But now that I brew commercially, I'm looking at this wall of barrels. And what I've discovered is as I go through and taste each of these barrels, they all taste different. Some of them will taste similar, but there's a range just in the same product.
Wow.
Two barrels sitting side by side came from the same winery, and one tastes like completely different than the other. And so I'm like, so now how do I? My problem is, how do I blend this now back 3 years? That seems almost impossible to me, because you just kind of have to take a leap of faith. You have to kind of, eyeball in your mind
what it's going to be like in 3 years.
Well, no, how when all those barrels are completely different from each other.
Well, most places
in that same year.
Okay, so fine, you take them all. And put them all into a bright tank, and then rebarrel them.
Yeah, I guess.
But generally, what
I do though is one doesn't taste good. I just dump it.
Well, fine, that's true.
Yeah,
just get it out of here.
Are all the barrels a different brand, a different stave type, a different toasting level?
No.
These will be the same.
These will be the same barrels, all used by, whatever winemakers. They're all same year, same cooperage and everything.
Hmm. And you were telling me that about the story of Brett could actually travel through oak.
Yeah.
And maybe they're changing the influence of each other. Maybe they're like affecting each other just being
there. Sure. They can go from barrel to barrel. What happens is, how Brett can work its way into the wood, like they used to say, up to a quarter inch deep. They can actually pass all the way through to the outside. And, part of what helps them, I think, is the mechanism of heating and cooling and humidity and all that kind of draws out liquid out of the barrel, and it loses, moisture out of the barrel. I think that little current of moisture can carry the Brett to the surface. And they sit there on the surface, and then it kind of gets a little dry, and there's a little puff of wind. And then, or somebody walks by, and it travels the 3/4 inch to the next barrel. And then the process is kind of reversed there, where it works its way in. And they've shown that, you know, barrels set up, stainless barrels, there's no such traveling. So, you know, the method was clean. But, you know, when you do wood barrels, it'll travel from one end of the wood barrels all the way to the others if they're within proximity.
True.
That's why we put our sour barrels at one end of the building and our bourbon barrels at the other end of the building, so that you don't have that travel through.
Crazy.
So, yeah.
That's got to be stressful.
Is there a solution for somebody that doesn't have a huge building and they kind of have to have all their barrels in one place?
They buy a building.
That's it. You have to acquire more space. Okay.
Yeah, if you're probably going that level and that amount of volume,
you build
all
a wall
time
or something.
That, you've done your homework, I hope.
Well, now you bring up a wall. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, right. Could you just frame out a quick wall? Would that
sure.
Would that work?
Yeah, yeah. I would think so. Yeah.
Big roll up door.
Wow. Jamil whacked his mic.
Like, slammed
it away from
him.
Yeah. All right. So. Anyways, you know, trying to blend something that complex together, you know, it could be quite challenging, I would think.
Yeah.
And it's just and that's goose for you, right? It's just
right.
A base beer.
It's an art. It's an art in and of itself.
Does goose ever contribute to a lambic at all?
Well.
Like maybe a fruit lambic? Would they ever take the bugs from a goose or
yes.
The base goose to maybe.
I mean, they're all considered lambic, right?
Right. But
and then, you know, it's just kind of like a special blend when they do, you know, like the 1, 2, and 3 year blends. Hmm.
So there's all kinds of blending going on.
Yeah. All right. Shall we take a short break and come back with beer in front of us and try and recover?
Let's pucker up.
Do we have any in the can? No.
Yeah, right.
No. Is there such thing as a goose in a can?
That'll be the day.
John was saying pucker up. Maybe think of the can. Okay. Well, let's take a short break. When we come back, we will have beers in front of us after this.
BN Army, I'm here to talk seriously for a second. You all are partially responsible for something explosive, and it's time you answer for it.
Moonlight Meadery is exploding.
Yeah, exploding across the country. Wait, they just landed in Australia with insane quality meads.
With nearly 70 different varieties of mead on the market, Moonlight Meadery has blown up the mead category and completely reinvented it.
Seriously? What?
Seriously?
What?
You're paying money for that watered-down mead when you could have a Moonlight Mead?
Moonlight Meads explode with quality and flavor.
They're a party in a bottle.
Did someone say party?
If you want mead and want the best, you want meads from Moonlight Meadery and will accept nothing less.
And now get 15% off by going to moonlightmeadery.com/BNArmy and use coupon code BNArmy at checkout.
Hey, sign me up for that party.
In a world where everything has been lost.
What happened to the city? It's in ruins.
Only one man has the ancient knowledge to restore civilization.
I need a drink. Oh no, the liquor store has been ransacked.
You looking for beer, stranger? Boy, all the liquor got drunk up in the first 25 minutes of the apocalypse.
Wait, there's still some bottles over... Oh, no. Those are non-alcoholic beer.
Hey, I reckon you better stick to arrowroot tea and a desperate nomadic existence like the rest of us.
People, I'm a home brewer. I know how to make alcohol.
Oh, it can't be done.
Come with me if you want the beer. Okay, I'm gonna need some big plastic buckets.
He is the chosen one. The prophecies say that he's gonna get us wasted.
Someone start heating water. And
from the creators of Northern Brewer, the people who brought you massive selection and superior customer service, comes the Home Brewer.
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own Magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out, or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Homebrewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own Magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from the BrewingNetwork.com.
You're listening to Brewing with Style on the Brewing Network. Now back to Brewing with Style.
All right, we're back. We've got the brewery Ruse.
Not a classic example, but the only one of the four that isn't.
Not a classic example. You've got Fontaine and Eau de Guise. We've got the Bone Eau de Guise and the Udbeersel.
Which are all classic examples.
Good job. Good job, Scott.
Thank you.
See, when he cares, he is capable of doing more than
minimum,
the basic minimum, barely able to function.
So you're saying I only care about sour beer? Is that what you're implying there?
No, I think that you rarely care, and when you do, you're able to accomplish things. Yeah.
Sort of like when I, because I do care about hockey, but I, so when I.
Well, you're not going to accomplish anything that that way, but yeah. But every once in a while, it shows that you have potential, Scott. You have
a lot of
potential.
You know, I've been hearing that my whole life. Oh, thanks, John. I've been hearing that my whole life, but at what point does it cease to be true? You got to fulfill pretty potential much, for it to be potential, don't
right,
you?
Pretty much from day one.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, they were just blowing some smoke here.
Damn it, Mom and Dad.
Just wanted you to feel good. All right. Has everybody had their tastes?
Yes.
Scott, are you ready?
Yes.
Scott, you may begin.
This has the potential to be good. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh. All right, good. I'm just warming up.
These are all really different. Interesting. Crazy sensory overload right off the bat.
Different but similar, yeah?
Just shocks your palate. Yeah, I mean, well, the Ruse does not taste like a goose to me. The other three do. So I guess they're similar in that, yeah, I would know that these were all the same style, except for the Ruse. The Ruse is very sharp lactic acid. It doesn't taste goozy to me at all. It doesn't have that, like, sort of charcoal rubber thing, which sounds really bad, but it's not in a goose. that I was expecting a goose. It's a sour beer. It's very, very sharply sour, but it's not goozy. The Boone was the fruitiest of the three. It kind of has a sort of white wine Chardonnay characteristic. Not buttery, but I don't know. I sip it, and it tastes like Chardonnay to me in a good way. The Beersel was really good. It had that classic goose. I don't know. I keep saying charcoal. I don't know how else to describe it. It's that classic goose thing. And the Drefontainen had it too. I love that beer. I love the Fontaine. So that's my favorite. The Beersel is number two. The Boone's number three. Ruse is number four. Are you sipping your beer so you couldn't go, huh? Or was that John? Who was that?
I did that for him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you had okay. All right. John?
My number four would be the Fontenay.
Get out of here. Two shows in a row, John. Feel the love slipping away.
I think it's a little too horsey, too acidic, but maybe it's just me because I'm going for more drinkability, not over the top. Cause it's a little funky for me, but I know this is just a funky beer in general. It's a toss-up between Beersel and Eau de Guise. What's the other one?
The Boone.
Yeah. I'm going to say three is the Boone. I think it has a kind of a too bacony, earthy note to it. And I don't like the mall character. I don't. The Beer Soul, I think, has the kind of best of all worlds. Beer-like, but has the sour, the acidic, and it's balanced to me. I think the style, you'd probably go Beer Soul number one, but for drinkability and having a goose-like impression, I know it's not in the style, but I prefer the Ruse number one. I like the oak character in Ruse. It has a really fresh oak flavor to it. And there's some subtle fruit notes going on.
Okay.
But it's a young goose, you can kind of tell. So,
which is supposed to be an aged. Right. Interesting. Tasty. So you had...
I don't know.
Brewery just, as one?
Yeah, just because I'm...
Beer Soul is two?
Yep.
The Boone as three. And Fontaine is four. Okay.
Fontaine. Well, you know, each of these beers has, you know, its own unique character. So, I mean, to me, like, not being a goose expert, I'm going by which one I like the best. You know,
it's like hookers.
What I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Which sometimes you're know? Like, you know.
Right.
Hookers a big fupa, sometimes you want no fupa, you know. So today, I definitely, no. So in terms of like just overall good flavor, I like the Fontaine. I like the way it comes out. The blending has obviously done a great job of dialing it in. In terms of overall impression, in terms of like this is what I expect in a goose, the Boone to me is like, it's right out there. It's really, you know, high intensity, a lot of body. For a goose, which is, you know, like how'd that body get in there when it's a body that the bugs like to eat. I definitely like that. Maybe it's just a bigger beer to begin with, why it seems to have more body. I don't know. The Beer Soul is the only one that had the gym sock sort of has more cheesiness going on. If I was looking for that, I'd pick that first, but I'm not. I'm looking more for the barnyard kind of thing.
Definitely has a cheesiness.
Cheesiness and the aroma, definitely. And then the brewery, it's just one-dimensional. It's like lactic acid and some other, you know, background flavors. I can't quite get it. I don't get much horsiness. I don't get a lot of typical lambic aromas or goose aroma. You know, to me, it's just a little bit out of style. So, in summary, at the Fontaine, the Boone, the Bursal, and then Ruse, just thrown out of style and discarded under the bus.
Very interesting. Yeah. Matt?
You might as well have given an abacus to a 2-year-old, because these things are just beating my taste buds to death.
You got to drink some sour beer to deal with sour beer.
Exactly. This is advanced beermanship. It's picking me apart right now.
You don't do the sours normally?
No. I've enjoyed sours before, but I mean these are just crushing my palate right now.
Well, I mean, look at like you like the Miscreant,
right? Yeah.
Right, and that had so what you one of the things you enjoyed in the Miscreant is the complexity. Of the ferment, the complexity of the aging. That's really what you're looking for in these.
Right.
Some complexity. You're looking for, you know, some of these flavors, the barnyard, the, you know, in a balanced way that makes it very pleasant to drink. A little more sour than we had the Miscreant, but
a lot more sour.
Again, I mean, again, yeah. Similar.
Miscreant was a tart beer, right? Not sour necessarily.
Yeah.
Right, and they're all definitely unique, but it's, sitting here from my position trying to pick them apart, staring at four math problems I've never seen before. It's amazing. You know, they're all amazing beers, but I mean, trying to decipher which one's the best is impossible at this point. Because
do you have one that you like the best?
The Boone comes off with a little bit more Chardonnay flavor, like you mentioned earlier, and it's the most palatable. But the other ones, you know, I don't want to sell them short just because of my lack of experience with the goose. But it's an experience. I mean, just sitting here right now, it's like you realize, holy crap, I need to taste more beer.
All right. I actually like the brewery Cruz. However, I do not think it is a good. One is because there's so much oak flavor in it. So the oak flavor is nice. The lactic sourness is nice. But it's really very straightforward. It doesn't have the complexity of the others and all the other compounds that are in there. Like somebody was saying, it does come across as more lactic. But I kind of like that oak flavor, but that's not appropriate for this style to have all this big oak going on. But a nice beer overall.
Yeah, really nice.
Well, and, you know, don't mean it to be a goose, right? Like, it's masquerading as a goose, and it does say here, our take on a goose-style ale.
Right.
It's intensely tart, funky beer combines three different vintages of our barrel-aged sour blonde.
Yeah. So, very nice beer. Classic example? No. But the part of the point of the show is, if somebody was to get that and go, oh, well, this would be, you know, they can't get the others, and so they can get that, and they're like, oh, you know, this is what a goose tastes like. We don't want them to think that. We want them to think, well, that's a nice beer, but here's why it's not a classic example. If you're trying to take the BJCP exam, which is, you know, the big part of why we're doing this is to help people along that path, that's why. Nice beer, but not classic example. I actually enjoy that beer. The Boone, almost all of theirs have a very kind of soft, almost a little bit more sweet approach to the style, I think.
How do they do that?
I mean, it does have a malty kind of impression, like a sweet
impression. Yeah, it's just a big, fuller-bodied beer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice, but also seemed to kind of fall a little flat for me.
Yeah, it has... doesn't have enough sour acidity going on. I mean, it's there, but it...
I mean, I like to see a more balanced drink by the pint type of hooza.
Wow.
You know?
That wouldn't be one.
That's good. Well, I think it doesn't... I mean, there's kind of...
Much more filling than the other.
Yeah, but not as sour.
No, but so I think that's because it drink. Has some body behind it. Like, offset that. It's like... it might be sweetness. You mentioned sweet. I don't think it is, but it's a maltiness.
I could drink more of the Boone than the Udbeersel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Beersel.
The Fontaine, there is a lot of burnt rubber, sulfury kind of thing going on.
Really barnyardy.
Isn't that rubber thing kind of sort of a classic characteristic of a goose? I get that in almost every goose I have to varying degrees.
Yeah, I think it's okay in a small bit, but that was pretty bold it was first poured.
Yeah,
It's kind of blown off a bit now, but it's still quite a bit. I think if it was a little bit knocked down, I would like that better.
Should we pour a little water into it? Do the Jay-Z the trick, and it'd be like two Fontaine in at that point.
Well, you know, it's hard to go from one to the other here. I mean, really, the way to judge this, say the Fontaine, is to get a pour, drink
it. Well, give us a bottle each to take home. We'll drink it over the course of a week.
And we'll get back to you.
And then we will, you know, we'll have each one of them consumed, and then we'll email you our answers.
You'll let me know. Okay. I'm really happy that we even have that to drink here. I feel like we went through a long period of time until recently where there was no Fontaine on shelves anywhere. I didn't see it for probably over a year.
So if you have the Boone, do you also pick up the rubber in it? The rubber in it is, and the sulfur is a more subtle example of the rubber sulfur that's in the Fontaine.
Yeah. It's present in all of these except the Ruse.
And it's just too strong, I think, in the Fontaine
right.
for me.
Okay, I see.
For me.
But, okay, so it's just, right, it's just a higher degree of something that is in a classic goose. Right. That should be there. If that characteristic isn't there, it's not really a goose. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think, you know, you need complexity. You need all these little aspects. The beer soul, the cheesy, again, a little bit of cheesy I'd be okay with. That's a little too much cheesy, I think.
Yeah, way too cheesy.
Yeah. I mean, I like a little sweaty. I like a little sulfury. I like a little rubber. I like a little horse. I like a little this. I like a little that. Yeah, I like a little whore. Horse. Blanket flavor. But I like it all kind of in a balance and a, you know, a come together, come to Jesus moment there.
Amen. Mm.
For yeah. me, I think it's between the Boone and the Fontaine. Now, what did we have here?
I had the Fontaine, then the Boone.
Fontaine Boone.
Yeah, I had Fontaine Beersel.
Fontaine Beersel.
I had Beersel Ruse.
Huh.
Huh. Well, Matt liked the Boone. I like the Boone. Let's call the Boone the winner. I think that's the way it could work.
You know, in the style guidelines, it does say...
Good job picking the winner, Matt.
About being the most drinkable and yes. balanced.
Yes.
And I was... The Boone, with all the funkiness mm-hmm. and the maltiness right. going on, it does have that.
You're still getting... excellent point, John. You're still getting all that complexity, but it's a little easier drinking than some of the others. Yeah. I mean, part of the purpose of blending is to develop a complexity, but also to, you know, cut down a little bit on the sharpness, even it out, add some body back instead of having something super thin and dry. You know, that's part of the
no. As it warms up, it's definitely it's number one.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I like oak
beer.
You could convince me almost of anything being, you know, a good. Everyone's got good arguments for the beer that they chose number one being number one. I really
yeah,
see.
All, yeah, it depends what you're looking for. Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is an excellent flight of beers. I think, including the brewery ruse.
Yeah, it provided an interesting sort of contrast.
Right, and it's interesting why it isn't a classic example. Still, again, nice beer, not a classic example, and this is why.
Oh. And I've never seen more variance in bottled beer than I see in goose. It varies quite a bit.
Yeah. That's another good point.
Yeah, it varies quite a bit.
Like, you mean like
sometimes you'll get one and you have to send it back. Like,
right, same brewery, same, you know, but one bottle being quite a bit of different.
Oh, it's a one bottle of Boone to the next.
Yeah. Right. Although, I mean, it just depends. I think some of the smaller producers, you know, a little more variance than some of the others. And also it depends on how it was handled, you know, how long, warm, and was it on its side, was it this way, was it that?
It's got active ingredients in it, so the environment that it's in makes a difference.
Exactly. It's a living thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that this is a, Goose's is built to age in general. I mean, there's a thing on the Boone that says best before 2033.
Yeah, 2033, I don't know. Maybe that's pushing it. I'd go 2030, 2032 maybe. I'm not seeing 33. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
You know, the mid-20s. You know, you can pop one and see.
Yeah.
Just have to wait.
Drink that shit now.
Yeah. All right. No, so, did we need to do a recipe? Do we need to...
Next segment, though.
Right. We should take a break.
There
yes?
Yes.
Hold that thought, Tasty.
No, it's about the ingredients. So.
Yes. Okay. Nice. So, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk ingredients right after this.
Tonight is the night.
We bring the creature to life, Dr. Blitzenstein?
Yes, J.P. Lore. Everything is perfect for my next fermented creation.
My doctor, the storm is too far away. We'll never have enough power to isomerize the creature's alpha acids.
Yes, J.P. Lore, we will. For I have in my possession the Tower of Power!
Whitman's new Tower of Power is the evolution of automation. Control hot liquor, sparge, and mash temps like a pro. The Tower of Power is a high-quality gas-fired rim system that works with your current brewing setup. With ultra-precision, the tower can hold your mash to 0.5 degree Fahrenheit. Precision and repeatability. The Tower of Power is the answer to automatic, fast ramp times. See more at BlickmanEngineering.com. Bring your next creation to life with the Tower of Power.
Dr. Blickmanstein, with the Tower of Power, you can probably give me an afternoon at the pub to enjoy a pint.
Don't be silly, J.P. Or we have beer to brew.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 10 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew for Your Die IPA in the Northeast, Northwest, parts of the Midwest, and Alaska in cans and on draft. So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Can.
A few things happened 30 years ago.
ARPANET migrated to TCP/IP, and the Internet was born. Revenge of the Jedi was renamed Return of the Jedi and opened in theaters. Mila Kunis and Emily Blunt were born, beginning a rad fantasy in my mind.
But all of that pales next to the fact that HopTech opened its doors and began blowing homebrewers right out of their mash tuns. HopTech doesn't fuck around. Real people shipping awesome shit straight to you. Their new website is fast and easy to navigate. Or just call 800-379-4677 and let badass bitch Jade and the gadget guy Roberto blow their warm load of customer service all over you. So visit the site or visit the store in Dublin, California, and support those that support you. Get your brewing on at hoptech.com. Now back to Jamil, Tasty, and this is Brewing with Style.
I tell you, you know, if you have questions about sours, try out that Sour Hour with Jay from Rare Barrel talking sours.
You know, we got Chad Jacobson from Crooked Stave coming on the next show, who's making making himself into a living legend already. And then we've scheduled a special Sour Hour this month in March because Rudy, the brewmaster of Rodenbach, will be in studio with us. Pretty cool.
Whoa, that's cool.
There you go.
And so then there's all the other shows, too.
Why,
you know?
Why do I end up on the rotten shows, then?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Why do I have all the sucky shows? Why everybody else have all the good shows?
Well, you are the show, so it's, I can give you a mirror if you want.
Yeah, well, thanks.
We got a video camera.
That's really great. That's really
well,
great.
We need to get another producer that'll get us some significant guests.
Yeah,
our show.
Yeah.
Like,
come on,
we could have a master blender of Goose in here right now.
Right, right. Exactly.
I'll be leaving now.
Well, maybe. Matt, the Easter guy.
Yeah, we have a special guest on every show. Don't you listen to the intro?
Right, that's right. Special guest.
Maybe the problem is Scott.
Me, it's always me. Right.
He had such potential. I always thought he had such potential.
I thought I still do.
Of course, he would argue that, well, Jay's bringing these people in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
well,
not
that's
like Scott's
true.
Doing any of the work.
Well, that's true. In this case, it is true because I think Rudy had heard about Jay and wrote him, like, hey, I'm coming to the States. I've heard about your brewery. So it's you know, I'm riding Jay's coattails, meaning Justin and Jay Goodwin.
And Jay Zanishev.
And Jay Zanishev, yes. Anyone with a Jay, I'm just bringing up the
hey, room.
Hold on to those coattails.
Yeah. Thanks for throwing me in there.
You're
at
welcome.
The end.
Well, everyone
that.
Named Jay. You know?
I
didn't throw you in. You threw yourself in.
You made me have to beg for it a little bit there, but, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk ingredients. Let's talk process.
Never made it good.
Bunch of wheat. Some
yeah, well.
A bunch, malt. Like half. What do you think? Half.
Yeah, like a half.
All right. Now, what's the purpose of the wheat? More dextrin, more fermentables.
Yeah, you can even throw like flour in there. I remember making a iambic with the.
That's what the acidity will do to you.
Dave Stabs's and the carbonation.
Yeah,
and at one point we just threw in some flour. Flour.
Why did you do that? You're putting in starch.
Just starching.
Keep starching.
You throw it in the boil and it puffs up. All the various critters that you may have that are capable of consuming starches.
Why don't they consume sugars?
Those are they will.
They'll do those too.
Yeah, and then it's kind of like a little bit of marching rations for the long haul with the starches.
Or they'll be there at the end when they're
when they get really hungry, like, okay, I'll eat this.
Right, right.
No, I read or heard that you'll get more of a funky character if you have more of these starches at the end or something like that, right? You'll get more barnyard or it affects the flavor, is what I understood.
Well, my understanding, that's no Jay Goodwin understanding, but my understanding is that there's a fundamental few things involved in the flavor development. So one is when you want that Brett character, the Brett character I'm talking about, the substrate for that is one of the critical substrates for that for that flavor to really develop is often phenols. So it needs to be combined with a yeast that produces phenolic compounds.
So an initial fermentation that puts these out.
And the Brett uses that preferentially and causes these flavors to be developed. Which is interesting because we've tasted beers where they've been produced with Brett and have very little flavor. They end up very clean and very little of what you would call Brett character.
Right.
Hmm. So part of that, see, there's got a home out of them. Part of that is the
the lack of phenols, right?
The lack of phenols. Ferment. Part of it is pitching rate, temperature, things like that. Also oxygen. So the amount of oxygen also present will cause the Brett to produce, with an excessive amount of oxygen, acetic acid, vinegar.
Right.
And other characters, when it forms in the presence of oxygen, the Brett forms that pellicle to protect the beer in a way. It's not like really protecting the beer, but I mean, it forms up this pellicle to take advantage of the oxygen. I don't know. And that also has a role in flavor development. Then also micro-oxygenation into the beer and things like that. What I find fascinating is there was a recent study of the beers, the wort and the beers and all this from a number of commercial lambic breweries. In Belgium and also in Canada. And they took measures of all the bacteria and yeast at pitching, X number of hours in, and then also once a week for years. And then they mapped all this out. And what did they find? No Brett.
What?
No Brett.
How can that be?
What was one of the things they found? Lager yeast.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
There's a bunch of weird bacterias. There's a bunch of different yeasts. No Brett. Lager yeast. Isn't that bizarre?
That is bizarre. Strange.
It just blows your mind.
Did the Brett convert itself magically into lager yeast?
No. So, because we all use, there's, lambicus and,
Yeah, but it was not there.
Right.
Wow. What does that tell you about the environment that Brett needs to thrive in?
Right, I don't know. But, there's all these other yeasts and things like that. So I really don't know what to do to approach something like this. Now, truly, to make a lambic, you have to make it in the Seine Valley of Belgium and all this, right? I believe you can make, you know, a pseudo lambic, you know, pitching all sorts of things. But I, you know, you could make your local lambic. Russian River does their synambic or whatever. It's a
synema, which is
right, and that's spontaneously fermented. I do believe where I'm at in Fairfield, I have perfect conditions to do, including lager yeast blowing on the air from the Budweiser plant, to do, you know, my own flambic. I don't know what I'm going to call it. And I'm going to do it.
You should. Fair lambic.
Give it a try.
Fair right. Flambic.
Oh, so, you know, the other thing that's always talked about is hops and aged hops. And they do. They have just bundles of stanky
that
aged
cheesiness
hops.
You get from,
Well, and you know, you don't want them too cheesy. The cheesiness bakes out of them over time, off gases. It's really just added as some sort of preservative for, you know, to keep the bacteria level in check is
and
what's
antioxidant
said.
As well. It does,
right,
yeah.
Right.
That's like hops' original intention. The throwback, isn't it?
Right, right.
Well, they use it for embalming, preserving.
Embalming?
Yeah.
Really?
It's a preservative, yeah.
They embalm people with it?
Yeah, they pack the Egyptians in hops.
No way. I didn't hear, really?
Dude, that's how I'm going to be buried. Just pour some honey on me and throw some, like, throw me through some hops. Be like,
I tried everything.
You can do that to me while I'm alive.
Right, yeah. Rub them all over me.
10-year anniversary. What are you thinking?
Yeah. Like a dunk tank full of hops and honey?
Happy. Imagine trying to get that off
before
bed.
I don't have any wrinkles. It's the hops.
All right. But, you know, one of the things I've always found is that Brett will keep a beer from becoming oxidized. If you have Brett in a beer, it doesn't tend to become oxidized.
So Brett loves like oxygen.
It's a scavenger.
Well, yeah, it's a scavenger. It's a yeast, which utilizes oxygen all the time. The other thing I found fascinating is somebody told me that Dr. Michael Lewis, again, this multiple hand, so I'm not saying Michael Lewis said this, but somebody told me that he said this, is that he said that you could take an oxidized beer, throw Brett in it, and the Brett would clean up that oxidized character.
The result?
Without contributing Brett character?
I don't know how much Brett character it might contribute, but it would clean up that oxidized character.
Huh.
And what's interesting to me is, I wonder, you know, the Brett must, and it makes sense in a way, because imagine this way. Oxidation is part of the breakdown of a product, right? So, like steel, when it oxidizes, it rusts. It is the process of steel becoming dirt again. So it's oxidation. Same thing in this. I imagine these compounds are becoming oxidized. When they are oxidized, perhaps, you know, they're more readily available and easier for the Brett to process. And that's why they preferentially would take those compounds first and prevent this oxidative flavor. Because otherwise you're thinking, well, it wouldn't work. You know, the reason we imagine in our minds, the reason that, you know, this barrel full of beer does not become oxidized because the Brett's there taking in the oxygen. Perhaps everything's becoming oxidized, and then the Brett take advantage of the fact that those compounds have become oxidized, making them easier for the Brett to consume themselves. And then they consume them. And that's why you don't taste the oxidation.
So you're saying Brett is capable of controlling its environment.
Well, you know, it's taking advantage of, you know, the compounds that are around it.
Right. But and, it can, you know, still maybe, influence it, though.
Oh, maybe it's you know, it doesn't take in the oxygen. You know, maybe it's taking in preferentially the oxidized compounds. They're easier to consume. I don't really know. I am not an expert in this.
Mind
but
blown.
These are
well,
the things that I've like heard it. And the things that, you know, I wonder about.
Yeah, well, oxidation, will, you know, change the nature of the molecule, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, the yeast, the bread, you know, when it sees a new...
Then may find it easier
to... might find it easier to consume.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
To
like,
break down
know.
Itself. Because what it does is break it down into food for itself and other compounds.
Right. It's like it, you know, it's...
Right. And
it can, so... It can eat a lot of short-chain sugars, but...
It may be waiting for that to happen before it consumes it. I don't really know. Maybe somebody knows,
once
but I haven't heard the answer.
All the ingredients are gone. Then it made all there is
right.
The cardboard flavor to eat. If you
right, 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 right.
Yeah.
So I find that interesting,
yeah,
too.
It is.
Oh, and so the hops.
It just blew
anyways,
my mind.
Well,
you know, one of the things you can do on hops is just, you know, take some high alpha hops with not a lot of excessive flavor and just use a tiny, tiny bit. And, you know, get a few IBUs into the wort.
Right.
But it is pretty easy to age hops. You know, start now. Sure, you know, just a paper, brown paper bag, throw some hops in there, and some burlap. And
hop companies sell them, right?
They have yeah,
them.
Now they're selling them.
Yeah.
Probably charging you know, a bunch.
Three
know.
Times as much, and they're, like, overstock thrown into a paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
What about yeast behavior? I mean, if you're talking about this behavior characteristic of Brett and his ability to take up oxygen.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've brewed homebrew, and I've split wort, pitched a vial each, and one will take off sooner over the other. Same amount of oxygen.
Right.
You know, there's this behavior characteristic. One will finish before the other. Eventually, mm-hmm. maybe they'll hit their final gravity target, whatever. But it just makes me think about that maybe yeast has a DNA characteristic where they'll have a preference over what they eat and how they eat it. Makes me
oh, sure. You know, generally what they're looking for is the easiest path. Yeah, you know, they're trying to survive. And for a you know, organism like that, it doesn't have a whole lot of reserves to do a whole lot of crazy stuff. It's just trying to take the next easy meal. And sometimes in order to process something, like when you put you know, brewer's yeast in a solution of, you know, mainly glucose or, you know, simple sugars, and then there's some, you know, raffinose and maltose and things like that. You know, in a solution like that, the yeast don't bother to produce the enzymes that will allow them to consume those more complex sugars because there's so much simple sugar there. They're just going to focus on that, and they'll save the energy it would have taken to, you know, produce this ability to consume those others. So, you know, the yeast are you know, looking at their environment when they're replicating, when they're... you know, when they're active. So it's a pretty interesting and fascinating thing. I'll tell you what, let's take our final break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up after this.
You're listening to Brewing with Style on the Brewing Network.
Adventures in Homebrewing have the knowledge and expertise to craft their own gear and original recipes. Some of the things homebrewing.org creates and manufactures in-house are the Brutus brew stands and propane burners, the Serial Killer adjustable two-roller grain mill with 7-pound hopper, custom stainless steel false bottoms designed to fit kegels, coolers, and mini-sized brew pots. The brewers at Adventures in Homebrewing have designed a huge selection of original recipes for extract and all-grain brewing. Adventures in Homebrewing original recipes are tried and tested, proven to be of the best quality. And right now, Adventures in Homebrewing is shipping 24 of their best recipes for free. Visit homebrewing.org for the most current selection. Once you try one of Adventures in Homebrewing recipes, you'll keep coming back for more. And now, it's even easier with free shipping on these kits. Brewing Network listeners receive 10% off their homebrewing.org orders when they use coupon code IPA at checkout. See terms and conditions for full details. Introducing Clarity Firm from White Labs, an amazing tool for pro brewers and home brewers. Clarity Firm is an endoprotease that will reduce chill haze and increase the stability of your beer, and produces gluten-reduced beer. Clarity Firm is easy to use. Just add it when you pitch your yeast, and Clarity Firm will do its work during fermentation. When fermentation is complete, chill haze will already have been addressed. In addition, reduce the gluten content in beers made with barley and wheat with Clarity Firm. Most beers made with Clarity Firm will test below 20 parts per million, the current international standard for gluten-free. Better looking and more stable beer with the added benefit of reduced gluten, so you can pour your beer for more friends and customers. Why wouldn't you use Clarity Firm? Clarity Firm from White Labs. The reasons are crystal clear. Learn more at whitelabs.com.
When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for every beer style. I want a Cicerone.
The Cicerone Certification Program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are three levels in the Cicerone Program: Certified Beer Server, Certified Cicerone, and Master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerones are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to MoreBeer.com today and take advantage of The Buzz, the forum, the Learning Center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Now back to Jamil, Tasty, and Blise. It's Brewing with Style.
Just goose it.
Been a long day.
It has been a long day.
Tuesday, right? Wow.
Is it still Tuesday?
Yeah. Right. Great. The time change is kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah. We got that to be thankful for. Okay.
So,
where were we? We were just wrapping up.
We were getting heavy there. That was pretty cool.
There you go. Do we have any questions from the chat?
Actually, I was just poked my head in there and asked Bevo, and she said, mostly the chat is just saying how they don't like goods, which is, that kind of shocks me. I would think that our audience would dig this
style. Hey, well, you know, it's a holdover crowd from the American Light Lager.
Oh, is it? They just tuned in to hear Bud Light, and they're like, yeah, I don't
much
care for the... I do have a question, though. Nice. Does Heretic ever plan on doing a goose?
Yeah, I think we do. I love this sort of thing. I love the complexity in it. But see, I really only want to do it if we can spontaneously ferment a decent, pseudo lambic here in Fairfield. Have a naturally inoculated...
A Fairfield strain?
Yes. And, you know, and do it from that and
awesome.
Really
like
do
jelly
it
beans.
The jelly beans and Budweiser. Oh, yeah.
Gunfire and malt liquor.
if we
Chevron.
Gunfire. I don't know about the police reports.
Right. If it proves itself out, I'm willing to build a cool ship, do the whole thing, do the whole nine yards.
So you don't have the ability to do spontaneous fermentation in your facility yet?
We do.
He's got the pigeons up above, though.
Yeah, well, I cleared the pigeons out.
You just leave it up.
Put the cool ship up there, man.
Yeah, I'm thinking of doing it above my cold box.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I do like 1,000 square feet up there. I do a 30-barrel batch. Boom, right into that cool ship. No problem.
Would it be fairly easy to build? I mean, it's just kind of like four walls, right? It's like a shallow pool.
Yeah, you know, traditionally
it's a kiddie pool for beer.
Right.
It is done from copper that has no welding, no soldering, no. It's just all hammered copper. So the seams, the liquid tight seams, are made from just hammered copper folded over.
That's interesting. They would be liquid tight.
Yeah, not interesting.
So not too cheap to do, or not too expensive.
It's somewhat the opposite of a stack.
Like a million yards of copper, yes.
It seems like that'd be hard, $50,000 clean.
Huh?
That's the idea. That it would be hard to, it's hard to clean, it seems like.
Right.
Over and hammered.
Yeah.
It sounds like it wouldn't be like, it'd be the opposite of a sanitary well, but in sanitary.
I think I'd throw a little solder on there. I don't know. I think I think I'd be too chicken. I don't know. I don't know. I'd like to give it a shot.
What about the naval fleet out there? They're breaking down those ships.
Right. Use one
of
those.
Take some of those.
Right.
I'm serious.
Yeah, old iron and use that. I think so.
That'd be like historic.
What's stopping you from doing a small amount right now? Wait, I mean, you have to have the right
wart. Oh, you know, just being so busy.
Do you make a wart that you could steal some off one time? Like
we have a sour base that we do.
Okay.
And then, but I believe that we're in the right position. We've got the hills behind us. We're kind of a little bit up on the hills. But the wind is almost constant. Comes in up the bay. And there is a number of fruit farms and things like that and ranches and stuff in the area. And marshes from the delta and all that. And the wind comes across that. And that's where a lot of this yeast and bacteria come from. Mm-hmm. And so you need that kind of environment. If you're in like a totally urban environment, I think it's much more difficult. Yeah. You got a bunch of fruit farms and a good breeze coming off of there. The other key ingredient is it needs to get cold enough. You need to have a certain number of freezing nights. Right, so I believe I've been told that in Belgium they wait for like 5 nights below 32 degrees, below 0°C. Right?
Is that because Brett will be the one that survives?
Right. So the yeast survive, the bacteria kind of die down a little bit, the activity of each. I believe that's the story.
It's got to get it out of the sweet spot for bacteria quicker.
Right, right, right. In the middle of summer, I think,
It's too slow to get there.
But we do, and I counted like the number of, cold days, this year, and I think there was like 3 or 4 in a row. And I'm thinking, this could work. This could really work.
That'd be awesome.
So my initial plan is to just take, they have these trays that they insert in like cafeteria buffet lines and stuff.
Take a
bunch of those, yeah. I'll fill them with wort, put them on my scissor lift, take my scissor lift up. Our skylights have louvers on them that are open all the time. Oh. Put it up there and see what kind of action we get. Then we've got a lab. We can isolate everything out and see what it tastes. I'd done some spontaneous fermentation before. And at home in Elk Grove, and I actually got some surprisingly good results. I was shocked. Mm. Even just leaving something out in my garage turned out quite well. Mm. I was surprised how well it turned out.
You're surprised in that most people would not have a positive experience from that? I mean, are most wild yeast
not good
flavor producers?
That's always the concern, right? That was always what we were told. Oh, you need to pitch your yeast, don't expose it, it's going to turn out right. And it's going to be this horrible thing. Well, the amount I've farted around, it's actually almost all turned out good. So I'm wondering, that's another thing that I always think about. So... two things. One, I'm wondering if that the creatures involved just seek a natural balance on their own. Because of the kind of environment they create, they all are taking advantage of certain aspects of the environment to their advantage as much as they can. And it's something that one doesn't use and the other does, and pH and all this stuff. And it all just kind of balances out on its own. And this is what I've believed on these blended strains. Initially we were saying, if you pitch a blended yeast, two yeasts, one's going to dominate the other. Yeah, maybe. If you pitch a mixed culture of bug and bacteria and yeast and things like this, eventually it's all going to go one way or another. But I've repitched stuff from other things, and it almost always turns out exactly the same way every time. Hmm. And my thought is, unless you are really radically preferentially pitching one way more than the other, it'll all just kind of hit this balance. And this balance is just repeatable every time. It just kind of hits this natural symbiotic relationship where everybody kind of gets along. And it always produces something, fairly decent.
Right. So if you think about so what to me might be in play there is that the organisms are selected, that they'll eat this but not that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this could be a byproduct of another another organism, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the end, once they've all eaten all the things that are on their list, it's there. So if you start out with a 50-50 blend and then you harvest, and pretty soon you really got a 90-10 blend. It's just going to take longer for the 10% to do its job.
Right. Do it. So, but you know, they all just kind of hit their thing. Yeah. So, I mean, that may not be 100% true, and I have no solid scientific proof of any of this is true, but a little of my anecdotal evidence suggests to me that this might be the case. And I've been told, on yeast blends and things that, no, it's not really going to work out, or it's going to drift one way or another. But the more I mess around with that, too, I'm like, well, I don't know. I think, it just kind of works out. So I'm sure there's instances where it won't, but I'm saying there's instances where it will.
Right.
And I think, when you're talking spontaneous fermentation, I think it almost always will.
Are those typically slower than a pitched of a
specific because
you don't have a starter, you've got nothing.
Right.
You've got a few,
you use them with very little.
They're slow to get going.
Now, when they're working in these cellars in these lambic producers, they've got over time, they'll build up a culture, and sometimes the barrels will still have residual yeast and bacteria and stuff in that, and that'll help. Okay. All right.
Did you just text me a question, Beaver? Is she even paying attention? Oh, here we go. Yeah. Let's do one quick one here because I got one from the chat. Could you set yeast traps in a certain area and then plate the results out and grow them up?
Yes.
Maybe for like a 1 to 2 gallon batch?
Yes.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. So, you can just take plates, set them out all over the place. Stuff will grow on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stuff that looks like yeast, you pick those off, grow them up, see what they taste like, and go from there.
Yeah.
That's from Craft Beer Geek 87. Let us know if you try that and what happens.
Yeah. That's, one way you can do it. Out under some apple trees, out, some fruit farm, things like that. You get some really nice stuff, I think.
Try
it's
that.
It's a good way to go.
Just keep it away from your girlfriend's vajayjay.
I don't know. Depends what it tastes like.
Right up.
Could be a benefit.
Right. Another fine show. I think, actually, we did kind of pull it up there at the end.
I think we did.
I think we came up. I think we were down here, and I think we ended, maybe up here. Well, maybe, somewhere in there.
I like this.
We got game.
Yeah. I think we brought it strong at the end.
Yeah.
We saw the end of the tunnel. We saw the light. We were like, okay.
I got inspired, so.
There you go. All right. Let our fine sponsors inspire you. Check out northernbrewer.com. Very inspiring. Check out the Brewing Network store, thebrewingnetwork.com/store. Goodies, hoodies, hats, everything there. Yeah. And when you buy that, it all goes to the bottom line, the Brewing Network. Until then, brew strong, everybody.
And on it.